We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your hosts, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show, episode 326. Well, it's 11 out of 13, 7-1 since Judge went down. No one expected this. The beaten and bruised Yankees go out to the West Coast, a place they've struggled, and they get the job done, Scott.
They do. They get the job done, and I mean, who would have thought that Judge going down would have given them a positive record? There's no possible way anybody's thinking that. I'm wearing my shirt that we had last year. It says the Empire needs Judge back. Right now they're running okay, but they do. They need it back because at some point all of this is going to, I feel like it's all going to crumble at some point with these replacement players.
You're saying it's a house of cards, what we're watching.
It is a house of cards, man. Like, people are getting very excited with the brand of baseball. They're all like pumped up with the small ball and all these guys like fighting for themselves. And at some point, talent will prevail. So that's why we need our guys back.
So what are we watching right now then? How are they winning?
I don't know. They're playing teams that are not good. I think that's also part of it.
I think that's going underrated. I mean, the Angels they have Mike Trout and basically no one else. And do the Giants have any self-respect? They just got swept at home. You'd think the Giants are going to be pumped up for the Yankees coming into town, right? That's a huge series for them and their fans. And they just can't even put up a fight for three straight days.
Well, I tweeted out what I see when I'm looking at this San Francisco Giants team. It's like a mishmash, like random, just scattering of
used
like
to be former, names, used to be
former
names,
AL
players.
East players, a lot of former AL East players. Like who assembled this team and said, "Oh yeah, now we're going to compete." And like, you know, throw in Andrew McCutchen into that mix too because he was on there last year at some point. It's like you're just getting a very random sampling of MLB veterans, who majority of them played in the AL East. It's a weird team.
It is.
Is Jeff Samardzija still on that team? Like,
I believe he is. Yeah,
I think he is too. Like, why is he still on that team?
Why? Because they signed him to a big contract. He can't.
Right,
offload
I guess so.
It.
They can't get rid of him. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, they tried to rebuild in a single offseason, and we've never really seen that work, right? I mean, I guess you could say the Yankees did in 2009, but they didn't necessarily need to rebuild. They just needed a few more pieces to get them to the World Series after the early 2000s run. But we saw the Giants try and completely restock their team with players past their prime.
Yeah.
And they fell flat on their face. They were trying to go one last run. They won the every other year thing. They still had Bumgarner. They said, "Let's try and squeeze a little bit more out of this stone," and they just couldn't do it.
Yeah, no, I mean they were winning in the even years, and they were trying to get things going again, and it just they brought in the wrong guys. What's funny to me is that they actually fired their GM, I think, in the middle of all that, right? And then brought
doing a more analytical approach now. So in 3-4 years, we'll be talking about a different Giants team, I think.
It's possible. Yeah. I mean, now it's like expiring contracts. That's what this team feels like. It feels like an NBA team that has a bunch of expiring contracts, and they're just like waiting to off it and reload.
But I've heard talks that they want to re-sign Bumgarner. He's their franchise player. They don't want him playing anywhere else. I don't know. He didn't look great on Friday night. We were all excited for that Paxton Bumgarner pitcher's duel, and it didn't turn out to be the way we thought it was going to be.
Well, no, that was I think when you're looking at what Paxton is now or what he can be, everybody in our head, you're thinking Madison Bumgarner. You're thinking like this big guy, big lefty, has the ability to go out there and dominate. And we were definitely expecting a pitcher's duel. We didn't get it, but you know, Bumgarner's always been kind of that guy too, where he shows up very differently in the postseason. And when there's a big game, the guy shows up in a big way. And I kind of just feel like the way that Paxton's built, I mean, I'm hoping more than anything, but I feel like that's going to be similar in fashion.
Don't put that on him. Oh boy. So now you have set up Paxton.
He cannot hit like Madison Bumgarner. That is a fact.
Mad Bum's got some pop in that bat, but you just set up Paxton for unmitigated disaster. Because
not just success. I just think he's going to be. I'm talking more about like the moxie, you know, like
okay.
the stones. I feel
well,
like
we saw that
those.
Big game mentality a couple weeks ago when he at the stadium pitched against the Red Sox. That was a huge start for him. We talked about how that was sort of a turning point for Paxton in the season because he'd been a little rocky, and then he just showed up and absolutely dominated the Red Sox. Went out the next start against KC, struck out 12, back-to-back 12 strikeout games. But then what we saw Friday was he got scuffled a little bit in the beginning and had to battle through some of that game and pitch at least into the sixth inning again. So we've seen him do that a couple times this year where he doesn't have his ace stuff, but he's battling through.
Yeah, no, I mean, I thought that was an impressive... It was an impressive thing to see because I think over the last three starts, we're seeing a guy that 3 to 4 starts, we're seeing a guy that did not have it at all. We're seeing a guy that went into Boston, basically, you know, to quote the great Aaron Judge, backs up against the wall and pitch against Boston the way he did. And then we see him against San Francisco and not having his good stuff, but still going through and up against, you know, the matchup that everybody was looking forward to in Bumgarner. So you're seeing like the different Paxton in different situations, and he responded. I mean, he didn't have it early, but he did, you know, keep it down and was able to pitch well and relatively deep into the game. Mm-hmm. For today's age, very deep in the game.
Yeah. And now they're 17-11, second place in the division behind Tampa. And they also have the second best run differential in the American League. Plus 37 runs, only behind Tampa. So two weeks ago, we were not thinking this was possible because they were losing guys left and right, and they're still losing guys left and right. That's the crazy thing. It's like they're completing a sweep on Sunday, and I'm happy because this team just swept in San Francisco. But at the same time, I'm like, holy shit, we just lost two more key infielders. With Urshela and LeMahieu. And I know they're hopefully not going to go on the IL, but they might not play in Arizona with the current status of them. So they're still dropping like flies. It's still getting picked off one by one like it's a firing line. Like, what is going on? And how are they still winning?
Yeah, I have no answer for it. That's the whole house of cards concept is what we're looking at. That's the problem. Unless we're starting to get guys back that can stabilize that house. But you're looking at. I mean, you say they maybe not gonna go on the IL. Like, I'm expecting them to go on the IL. Maybe not Urshela.
You think both are gonna go on the IL?
Maybe not Urshela only because the X-rays were negative and that was more of an impact thing because he
God,
got.
I
hit
thought
on the
that
hand.
Was a broken hand immediately.
Yeah, it looked bad. But LeMahieu, I expect to go on. I mean, just from on Friday night when he fouled that ball off his knee, like I tweeted immediately, like, oh, who else is expecting an MRI tonight? Because it looked bad, and you could see like immediately when he did that, he grimaced and he was. He was really trying to fight it off. And like, he's a guy that doesn't really show anything. It seems like so
well,
far.
I mean, think about his mindset at that point. He's like, I can't go on the IL. Are you kidding me?
No, but I know, but I'm saying the immediate reaction that I saw, like the immediate, like ball to knee reaction was that shit hurt, you know? And sometimes with the knee, it can flare up later. Like it can
yeah, well,
get
it did.
Fluid.
It didn't even flare
it
up the next
do, like,
day.
A lot of things. Yeah.
It seems like it flared up 2 days later.
Yeah, well, you know, he tried to play through it, obviously, and he's able to hit the ball even with
a good
bum
series.
He had a good series. He was really good. He was really good.
So yeah, he had the X-rays, and then I saw some news late last night that he's being sent for an MRI. We haven't seen the results on that MRI yet. I guess the only good news is the Yankees have two off days this week. They're off Monday and Thursday. It's just a 2-game quick series in Arizona.
Yeah,
but it's tough in National League parks to play a position player. Down because you're pinch hitting, you're double switching, you're doing a lot of different things. So going in to Arizona and National League Park, if you're playing with a 24 or even a 23 man roster, that's going to be really difficult. You're putting yourself in a position where no one else can go down. And that's kind of funny because on Sunday, we saw this kind of happen because they had Urshela and LeMahieu out of the game. So that means they had to put in two of their bench players. And then when it was time for Herman to be pinch hit for, Boone wouldn't even send up Mike Ford because Mike Ford was the last guy on the bench. So if something goes wrong, they have no one else to play the field. So yeah. He called back Ford and sent up Hap, which I don't really understand. I don't know where the nerds found that in their spreadsheet, like the genius that like dug in some like VLOOKUP formula and was like, oh, Hap for Paxton. This one's going to really trick him. But I mean, Hap for Herman, but Hap went up there, grounded out. I think Herman could have just gone up there and taken three pitches down the middle because, frankly, that's all I want them to do.
And then, I don't want them swinging the bat. Like this whole running, and especially now, I want nothing to do with that. I want to get the hell out of these National League parks with all of our pitchers intact. That's the only objective at this point. Like now, where we are, the mission has changed. We need to leave Arizona with fully healthy pitchers. That's it. I don't care what else happens. Honestly, even if they lose two and they come out with two healthy guys that were starting those games, I'm happy. I don't want J Hap coming up in a pinch hitting situation and swinging the bat.
See, that's why I didn't get it, because Herman is at least loose. He's been in the game the whole day. Just send him up there, and even if he's going to swing, he's going to swing and miss, because you saw how ugly his at bat was when he was trying to bunt / slap play the ball. Like he had never done it before, and it was obvious he had never done it before. So I'm just sitting there, like I'm picturing him trying to bunt, and he's just going to take one off the right hand, off the knuckle. Like this is how he's going to go down.
Yeah, looks like a four-seam.
But you're sending up Hap, a guy in his late 30s, to just raw off the bench, go up there and swing a bat.
Crafty veteran.
I'm like, oh, great, here we go. Some news after the game. J-Hap hurt his back trying to swing the bat. Like,
strained oblique. Yeah, I mean, you know, and I think it was like a 99-mile-an-hour pitch or something that he actually grounded out. I thought I saw a tweet.
And I get it. He's been in the National League. He's been in the National League. He looks like a much more competent hitter than Herman. But there's two outs in the inning.
It's been a while since he's been in the National League.
But there's two outs in the inning. What are you really hoping for? Best case scenario, he gets a base hit or walks, and then he's got to run the bases.
Yeah. These are things I don't want from our pitchers. I really don't.
So you think he's going to park one and he can? No, he's not going to park one. So what are you doing?
Yeah, I don't know. If you were sending up someone like that too, like you'd think that the bat would just be on the shoulder, right? Like you're just putting a body in there and like that's it. Just to play the National League, stupid National League game. We have to go up and throw up J-Hap in a position where a professional hitter would be, you know, weird stuff. Like they need to just scrap this nonsense and go to the designated hitter already, please.
Probably going to be after the next CBA, so enjoy it while it lasts, because we only got like two more seasons of this podcast bitching about this topic.
Yeah, well, fine. I'll take that one off the board, you know, gladly.
So let's go back to Friday's game when it was, we thought it was going to be Paxton versus Bumgarner. You could kind of tell immediately it's not the same Bumgarner. Yankees got to him for a few runs early in that game, and it's not like he was facing a murderer's row lineup. I had a stat in here. Friday, 4 through 8 in the Yankees order was Urshela, Maben, Romine, Talkman, and Estrada. Okay. The Giants in their lineup had Tyler Austin and Yanhervis Solarte. If you add up Solarte and Austin's career games with the Yankees, it equals 160. If you add it up to that point, LeMahieu, Voit, Urshela, Maben, Talkman, and Estrada, it was 131 games with the Yankees. So the Giants had two players who had played more time with the Yankees than the Yankees had in their lineup.
Yeah, it's just strange. And then you got guys like, that's just a telling sign to how these guys have played. So like mad, unbelievable credit to the Mike Fords of the world, the Tyro Estradas. These guys are coming in and have no business to be there. No business whatsoever. And they're winning. And they're putting together good at-bats. And they're doing all these things. So, look, I said before, this is what this is going to do is just going to make the team better, deeper, more experienced, so that later in the season when we do have everybody back, hopefully knock on wood, then we got guys like this to come in. And now they're filling in late inning defensively. But, oh, by the way, they can put together a good at-bat. Or, you know, they've been in situations in the major leagues now where this is not a new thing, a new feeling. So, in the end, silver lining, going to be a better team.
Well, what I think we're seeing is all these guys know they're not going to be – they're not here for the long term. They know one or two of us is only going to be on a 25-man roster come the end of the season.
Yeah.
So, they're fighting for their lives at this point.
Yeah, no, it's true. And by the way, the Murderers Row comment, I tweeted this out too, and I had a really good response. So I had LeMahieu, Voit, Glaber, Urshela, and I put Murderers Row 19. And Eric, at Eric underscore M 888838, renamed that to Manslaughter's Row.
That's actually really good.
It's really good.
I like it. Put it on like a t-shirt.
The
give
intent,
him credit, I guess, because we had some trouble.
Yeah, the intent to kill, but not so much.
Yeah. No, the like intent it. The intent to just get a few base hits and maybe win a game by a run or two.
Yeah, we had PJ had a contact row.
Catch the ball and turn a double play row because yeah. they're doing that
fundamental row. How about that?
Better than a lot of the team that did it last year. Well, you joked about Murderer's Row, but if you look at it, DJ LeMahieu and Gio Urshela. So LeMahieu, 109 WRC plus this year. Urshela, 133. Manny Machado, 99.
That's a shame. And what happened right after we tweeted that? I saw.
I don't know what happened.
some bad things started happening. People started falling like bad things out of the sky. So the it's nice to see that though, because it makes everybody who was talking about Manny Machado shut the F up
for the time being, because no one thinks that Machado is worse than either of those two players. But
maybe they do. Maybe they do.
Oh, well, I don't. I tweeted it and I don't think that. The Yankees won obviously all three games over the weekend. It got a little scary though, both on Friday and Saturday late in those games. So on Friday, Britton in the seventh inning walks three batters, and Ottavino has to bail him out of a jam there. And then on Saturday, Sessa going up there swinging like he's Babe Ruth in the ninth inning, and then forgets how to pitch, gives up a couple bombs, and it got interesting late on Saturday too.
Yeah, the whole Sessa thing was just strange, especially because he's been pitching so well this year. You expect him to go in there and just clean up and finish up the game.
Yeah, look at this. He came into the game with a 1.59 ERA and left with a 4.15.
Yeah, that's not good. That's a bad outing. And it's going to take him a while to get that back down now too, probably because of those numbers. That's what happens when you're a reliever. But I mean, so I don't know, like, if the fact that he was trying to you know, be a big guy out there and you know, maybe he was, it's because he's like, oh man, I was drafted as a, I think he was drafted as a shortstop or an infielder or something. He's like, I can hit, I know how to do this. And then, like, got all puffy in the chest and tried to go out and do something for really no reason. And then, you know, he was exhausted when he got to the mound because he's like, damn, I don't remember it being that tiring.
Yeah, and I'm three tired. Swings and misses are really, really makes him gassed.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, if you make contact, it's better. You know, if you swing and miss, it's just like all that energy just leaves and there's nothing to like catch it.
I get it. These guys are excited to hit. It's a thing because you see the bench kind of go up on the top step and have their attention is on the pitcher trying to hit. They think
how many bets
funny.
Were there that Sessa could do something and he's making I'm bets sure like, yeah, I'm I did sure this. Yeah, exactly. I got bets. Yeah. You know, but you got Gleyber Torres pointing to the dugout yesterday. Like, these guys are talking in there, like saying things to each other. Like, it's just the you know, the dynamic of a clubhouse.
And I'm sure if I was in that position and I were
same thing.
Pitcher in Major League Baseball and I couldn't hit a lick, I would go up there and try to hit it to the moon.
Right.
But
that's how bad things happen. Whether it's an injury or you just get thrown off of your regular stuff.
That's why I'm sitting here, doing a podcast, and he's on a plane to Arizona.
Right. I mean, Luis Sessa's out of options though, so he should remember that when he's going up there trying to big dick Luis Sessa with his bat and trying to get things. But Friday night, this is the more egregious thing. Like, this was what was driving me nuts. Was Britton in the game while just he got I think two quick outs and then walked a guy and then Boone for some unknown reasons like, oh yeah, let's go with him still.
Well, I think it was still a lefty.
It was a lefty, but it doesn't matter who's up in the box, righty or lefty, if you can't throw a strike.
He was around the plate, but you could tell that his sinker was moving a lot, and they just weren't swinging at it.
I think the second guy that he walked was four straight balls. I mean, he lost the zone, and you could see on his face that he lost the zone. He knew he lost.
It's not the first time it's happened this year. It happened in Houston too.
Yeah, so it's just one of those things where, like, those are the moments. This is really my biggest and one of my only things that I'm on Boone for that drives me nuts is that when you have a situation that's clearly, you're looking with your eyes and you see what's happening on the field, especially on the pitcher's mound, that you're seeing a guy that's not right. Something is not right. And yet you're staying with him, getting greedy and gonna like try to get that one more out or those two more outs, similar to what they did with CeCe in the playoffs. And, you know, look, maybe he doesn't walk that third guy. Maybe he leaves a meatball over the plate. And it's, you know, I think it was Brandon Belt was the hitter. So yeah, I see the lefty-lefty matchup, but it doesn't matter when you're not around the plate, like throw those numbers out the window. You need, this guy's looking for something down the gut. And if he's making mistakes, there's a very good chance that he can make a mistake over the plate. So it didn't kill him in the end because Ottavino came in and got out of it, but it was playing with fire. And we've seen that go bad too many times already.
Ottavino came in and made Buster Posey look like a little leaguer, but I don't think that if it's not a lefty-lefty matchup, I think he's out of that game. So,
but again, I just don't understand.
No, I get it. I get it's a fair second guess. I think there's and Boone had a second guess in, we didn't talk about it yet, but the Thursday game, the last game in Anaheim, that game got out of hand with Tanaka. We'll talk about him in a second, but in the sixth inning, it's a tie game. And there's two runners on, and he brings in Holder, who had been struggling all year. Other than Chad Green, Jonathan Holder has been the worst reliever. And you go to Holder in a tie game in the sixth inning with two runners on instead of arrested Ottavino, arrested Canley, or arrested Britton. I don't understand that move at all. I understand that there's a bullpen hierarchy, but aren't we sort of past that this guy gets the seventh inning, this guy gets the eighth inning, this guy gets the ninth inning? This is more about leverage and more about what is the game situation telling me. And the game is telling me I got to get out of this sixth inning tie game jam. Who am I going to go to? Not Jonathan Holder.
Well, that's the whole point of having such a deep bullpen, isn't it? Like the whole point of having such a deep bullpen is that you have guys that you can trust late in the game and they're interchangeable. You can mix in Ottavino. You can mix in Britton. You can mix in now Canley. I think Canley has proven that he's
Canley's ERA. Canley's ERA is now 169. He's been having a fantastic year.
Yeah, so that's the thing. Like we're not talking about these. We shouldn't be talking about these inning slots. They are good enough where they can go anywhere. And if you're looking at a guy that's struggling, why at that point do you need to bring him in when you have, like you said, three guys rested and ready to go that would be better in that situation?
And Holder gave up the two runs in that inning. And at that point, then instead of going to your big guns, you go to Tarpley, you go to Joe Harvey, and the game gets out of hand. Yeah. So it's a game that started off good for the Yankees. They had a lead. Tanaka, in the blink of an eye, loses it in the fifth inning, gives up two-run homers in the fifth inning. So this is now the second time this season that's happened, because it happened in the White Sox game too, where he gave up the grand slam. It's like if you had gone to take a leak and came back, it's a completely different pitcher on the mound. What the hell happened?
Yeah, no, it's weird. It's weird why that's happened with him. I have no answer for it other than, you know, he just lost it for a second and leaving balls over the plate. But, you know, at that point, once Holder comes in and lets those two runs up, like, I understand. I think he's just punting at that point, bringing in Tarpley and Harvey. So not going to bring in the other guys.
I don't mind.
Won the series. You're just trying to get through that, like minimize what the damage, I guess. So at that point, it is what it is. But the Holder thing is odd.
Yes, exactly. I'm not blaming him for the Tarpley move. I'll blame him for the Holder move. But so with Tanaka, I was. Another little factoid from the Inside the Empire book. There was a little section on Tanaka and how the last couple years you've had two different Tanakas, and three out of four times he goes out there and he looks like an ace Tanaka, like the pitcher we saw in the playoffs. And then one out of four, you'll know immediately, oh, it's the bad Tanaka today. He's leaving balls up in the zone. It's the Derek Jeter day against Houston where he's given up four home runs in two innings, and you know it immediately. Well, that hasn't happened this year, because now the two games he's really struggled in, he's looked fantastic through three, four innings, and then he just loses it. So it's it's a different struggle that we're seeing with Tanaka this year, where mid-game he leaves balls up. Because the home run to LaStella was supposed to be a pitch on the outside corner, and it was a pitch in the middle of the plate up. And then the pitch to Calhoun was a hanging splitter.
Yeah, no, it's a weird how it just kind of goes away in the middle of the game. But I mean, if we're asking preference, if you're giving me two options, the Derek Jeter day Tanaka, or the guy that leaves a couple balls over the plate in the fifth inning. You know, I feel like we could possibly avoid the second, you know, the Tanaka of today. But I mean, like, to get on, we're saying this because we're talking about that game, but Tanaka's been phenomenal. Like, the guy's going to struggle. He's obviously not going to be perfect throughout the entire thing. So I think what we're seeing from him is minor struggles and just overall scheme, like seeing what Tanaka has done. I mean, he's been so impressive that I think some of these little blips are just going to come and just kind of take them. He's been good in the big moments, and I think that's what we're mostly. And also, just to like touch on Boone, not to crush Boone for this stuff too, because the good thing is, flip it the other side, all the Boone haters right now have really not much to say. When they're winning with this team and seeing what they're doing, you really can't say jack shit about Aaron Boone at this point, because what he's doing with these guys is pretty good.
Yeah,
pretty good.
We have a mailbag question about that later. But yeah, when you pastime like no other, a tradition like no other, is for Yankees fans on Twitter to complain about the lineup. But right. When you have a bunch of replacement players, like, what are you going to complain about?
There's nothing to complain about. You cannot complain about it. You just can't do it. You go into every day and you see that lineup, you chuckle a little bit when you first see it. And you're like, all right, here we go. Let's see what happens.
This is going to be fun. Okay, you're going with Urshela, Mabin, Romain Tocmanistrada against Mad Bum. Let's see what you got, guys.
What could go wrong?
What could possibly go wrong? It has been, and I'm glad you brought up Tanaka being, on the large part, good, because it has been the pitching that I think has been the key to this winning streak.
For sure.
Tanaka, we mentioned him. Hap, since that third inning of the Boston game, has been great. He's been the Jay Happ we signed up for. And then on Saturday, 7 innings, 5 hits, no walks. So you really look at that third inning of the Boston game, and that's been a turning point for Happ. That's when he figured something out.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, going back to some of his earlier starts, I mean, we mentioned this and not using them as an excuse, but really just like a situational, this is what happened. He had, he was pitching in the rain, basically, both starts. The second one, I think, was the Friday game. I was at that game before our event.
It was monsooning all day.
Yeah, but he also had, there was the, I think the time before that, there was a delay.
Rain
and
delay
then he came in.
Baltimore.
Yeah. So he had some odd starts in the sense that, like, the weather was bad or there was delays. You know, again, not to use those as excuses, but they're reality. Those were actual situations that happened. And since then, I just never really was worried about him, because he's such a consummate pro that, you know, this guy, you look at his number, the number, and how old he is, you see his birthday, and he doesn't act like that. Like, when you see this guy pitching, like, physically, you would never think that this guy's an older guy. Like, he's got no problems. He still pitches in the, you know, mid-90s. He's still a very effective pitcher. Like, I don't think we've seen age really affect him much at all. So I was really not worried about him.
Yeah, I think I was mildly concerned, because he was getting beat around by bad teams.
Yeah,
it was the Orioles and the White Sox.
But you could identify why that was happening. He wasn't able to locate a fastball. Like, he could not put the fastball over. So when you see that, when you see a struggle like that, like, okay, the guy's just missing his spots. Now you're like, okay, can this guy come back from? Can this guy find that spot again? Yeah, I think he could find that spot. So if you locate the fastball, is he going to be okay? And I think that's what we're seeing.
Yeah, yeah, and he's turned the corner, which is great. And we've been sort of praising the replacement lineup, but they're still getting big hits out of two key power hitters, Voit and Sanchez. Sanchez hit two of the longest home runs I've ever seen this weekend. The 460-foot blast grand slam on Saturday, and then he almost left the park in left field on Sunday afternoon. Just absolute bombs. He looked terrible in that one game back off the IL, but he's starting to get the groove back.
Didn't I predict that he was going to be, you know, like this monster Babe Ruth kid coming in? Yeah.
Yeah.
I was just, you know, one series off a little bit. No, he's been impressive. Like, those home runs were ridiculous. The grand slam, first of his career, which is pretty cool that he was able to take that out. I think Lindsey Adler tweeted out Gary Slamchez. I love it. I think it's perfect. But the seeing him back, huh?
That's an old one.
It's his first home run. It's his first grand slam.
Yeah, I know, but
it applies to him perfectly.
Continue.
And either way, the beauty of that is that he's coming out and he understands that, you know, he needs to be an offensive juggernaut basically for this team. Like, he needs to be that guy. He needs to be the guy right now. And, you know, he's the one that's been on this team, you know, probably he's the veteran that's in the lineup, essentially. They're looking at him, the catcher, the guy that's controlling the game. So they need him to hit. So I'm glad he is.
He's been good. Luke Voit has been the one who's really been carrying it. I saw an article MLB.com posted early MVP candidates, and Luke Voit was in there. I think it's a little early to start talking about MVP candidates, but hey, you know,
if we're talking about it, it's legit. I mean, if the conversation's happening,
yeah,
you put him in there.
Got to get those internet clicks though. The Luke chants in San Francisco were out all weekend, which I kind of reminded me of the Didi curtain call last year in Anaheim, right? Once you start getting an opposing ballpark, the home chants, the home curtain calls, like that's when you know you are doing something special. And he's been moved up to the two hole with the current state of the lineup. He's not going to stay there all year once guys start coming back, but he's producing right now. I mean, he's just such a fun player to root for.
Yeah.
Like the bear hugs he was giving after the win, I believe that was Friday night. We put up on Instagram the picture of him on the plane with the belt, the championship Yankees belt. I guess he won it for this series. So
he was going back and forth with Glaber on Instagram last night too, saying, you know, did we just become best friends doing this whole thing, like the gift from Step Brothers. So there's definitely a really good vibe with him. The guys love him, and yeah, he's mashing. So I mean, this is the guy that has a chip on his shoulder that says I can hit in the major league level. Everybody said a lot of people thought I could not. My defense is, I'm working on it, but yeah. I can hit.
The defense is an issue, but both traditional and advanced metrics are good. He's leading the team in home runs, RBIs, and total bases. Check, check, check. Advanced metrics, exit velocity, hard hit percentage, barrels, and expected weighted on base average are all above average. Above average to really good,
yeah,
for as far as league standards. And if you look back to August 1st of last year, which is the point in the timeline that skewed, right? The Biff Tannen, when he got the Sports Almanac, went back in time. August 1st, that's the date we're looking at. He ranks 7th in Major League Baseball for WRC+. 7th!
Yeah. No, I mean, he's been impressive. And I think one of the, to tip the cap to the nerds, the reason they were going after him, one of the big reasons is because they saw the metrics on him when he was with St. Louis with the hard hit percentage, the barrels, and they said this guy can hit, and he's maybe been a little bit unlucky, but they had a true belief that he was going to hit on the major league level, and that's checking out. And that's where I feel like a lot of this stuff is really beneficial, is looking at, you know, what a guy really is and seeing, you know, a guy that maybe not giving you the numbers that you would expect on the back of a baseball card, but looking behind that and finding those gems. Like, that's where I think these numbers are absolutely beautiful. You can find some people that are doing things that, unexpected to the eye, are doing good things, are barreling up.
So this is the question I wanted to bring up, because Brian Cashman and his department love to puff their chests out about this kind of stuff. They found Didi, a diamond in the rough. They found Hicks, a diamond in the rough. And now they found Voit, who's proving to be a diamond in the rough. How much credit do we really give them, and how much do they also get a little lucky?
Well, I mean, luck comes when you're not doing it very often. But when you start looking at track record and you start looking at the way that they've done it, because there's definitely a trend.
But it's not like they hit on everyone. There's plenty of players they don't hit on. We're just talking about the ones they do hit on.
Yeah, but the deals to the major league, there aren't very many that they've missed on, honestly. There are, like, these types of deals. I mean, even look at what Talkman's done. I mean, he's not been great offensively.
Well, that's the thing. That was what we heard. That was the narrative, is that Talkman's going to be a next Didi, a next Aaron Hicks, a next
Luke Voit.
Well,
I mean, it's an easy narrative because of who he is. He was a guy that you know, had flashed in AAA, but never really did anything on the major league level. So, I mean, it's an easy comparison because the numbers look similar in that sense. And he's just the guy that nobody knows who he is. But again, yeah, he's making hard contact, like, you know, plays very good defense. We'll see where that one lands. But there's a lot more good than bad with these trades. So they have a good track record. And I think that's where I'm throwing out the lucky thing. Like, they're definitely looking for something and it's working.
I mean, obviously.
If I'm an opposing GM and Cashman calls me,
you're starting to get skeptical.
And he's looking at some random dude in AAA who's been there for a minute, or like a random guy in AA. I'm like, hold on a minute.
Well, this is why.
Can I get my nerds on this guy? And like, let's find out why Cashman's calling about him.
Yeah. So this is why what the Yankees need to start doing is asking for a different guy first. Right. Pretend like you want someone else, and then when that guy's like, no, no, that guy's got to be special, like, all right, I'll take Luke Voit.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then maybe that's what he's doing now too. Like, he's got to, you got to change your tactic. Like, you got to change up your signs when you have a guy on second base.
Exactly. It's the second sign, not the first sign. You got to do the indicator first, tip of the cap first before we go.
Yeah.
Another fun little tidbit is that Voit's been using Andujar's bat since the last homestand.
Oh man, I kind of love that. That's beautiful. See, that's all in the family right there. That's good stuff. And Andujar probably, you know, did like some beautiful little blessing on it and made sure that it was all good.
Like the Pedro Serrano.
Yes.
Major League. He's got a whole seance.
All of these things happening.
Yeah.
All of these things are happening in the clubhouse.
Don't you think though, like Voit should be using, I don't know, Andujar seems like to have too small of a bat for Luke Voit, but I guess it's working.
Nah, I mean, Andujar's a strong guy, man. He could
no doubt, but Luke Voit is bigger.
Fine, but Barry Bonds used to use like a 30 or 31 ounce bat.
It did look like a toothpick. It did look like a toothpick. Yeah,
he was all about bat speed.
That's true. Yeah, we're seeing a lot of bat speed out of Voit. So very fun to watch right now. Let's also talk about, so after we last recorded, Cameron Maben was acquired, and this was out of necessity. He was in AAA for the Indians, and they brought him in because Frazier had just gone on the IL. So they literally were down to their seventh outfielder. I mean, when you look at it, Stanton, Judge, Hicks, and Frazier all on the injured list. That's four out of your top five outfielders on the injured list. You were at a point where it's Gardner, who has not gotten really a day off and will not be getting a day off anytime soon. And you have Talkman, you have Tyler Wade out there. You had to bring in somebody. The Yankees had been interested in Cameron Maben back in spring training. I think he was a guy they were looking at while they were looking at Mike Talkman, and they decided to go with Talkman. But here's Maben coming back because they need somebody.
Yeah, and now, you know, especially if we're starting to see any more injuries happening or whatever, you're going to see with LeMahieu down and Urshela, you know, who knows how long they're going to be out. You're going to see Tyler Wade in the infield now. So now the outfield is...
Can he play left field and third base at
the same time?
He can is just pretty play fast. In the middle there somewhere. Yeah,
he's pretty fast.
We heard about that speed.
Extremely good looking. So maybe people will like just get, you know, the glare, get scared away. But, you know, it's one of these things that they're... I mean, it doesn't even matter who's the next guy. I mean, they got Estrada playing left field. He never played left field in his life.
No,
and he played two games in left field.
I think you're gonna. I honestly think if another, knock on wood, hopefully no one else goes down. But if another guy goes down,
is gonna go down. I mean, that's just the way that's working. So
what I think
we might
will
as well
have
talk
to happen
about it
then,
like it's gonna happen.
What will have to happen is they're gonna have to call up Higashioka and then use Romine in the infield.
Yeah, but that's playing with fire too now. Like, you get an injured to...
Okay,
I understand
that, but like, what else do you do? You have no one else on the 40-man roster. Like, someone tweeted me yesterday when Urshela got hit. Someone tweeted me, he goes, I would say the Yankees need to retaliate, but they can't lose anybody else, so don't. They have no one else to... If anyone gets suspended in this game, Sabathia is going to be out there playing first base.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's not even an exaggeration. Like, it's an issue at this point. Like, there literally is no depth. They've gone, their backups are getting hit and hurt. It's crazy. But no, you have to,
T-shirt, backups against the wall.
Backups against the wall. Bringing in Maben, I mean, this is a guy that was hitting 215, 216 in AAA. He was a AAA Columbus.
I don't care what anyone's stats are anymore. You need a warm body to be able to go out there and not get hurt.
I just think it's funny when we're bringing in guys who are, you know, veterans who I keep forgetting how long he's been around, by the way.
2007, first career home run off Roger Clemens.
Yeah, that's crazy. When I heard that and I was like, God damn, he's been around since Roger Clemens. But he has been around for a long time. He was such a big prospect.
He was their number one, one of their highest prospects, the Tigers, and he never really panned out. I mean, he's had himself a career. He was in the majors a full season last year for two different teams. He wasn't very good, but he was in the majors.
Yeah, but when we're bringing in a 12-year veteran who's hitting 215 in AAA, like, you know shit's bad.
Dude gets a hit in his first at-bat, RBI Madison Bumgarner's first at-bat.
Just like it's scripted. Yep.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah. Going to Arizona, two games. I every time I even look at that ballpark, I get nightmares from 2001, and I always will.
Yeah, me too. It's one of those things that will be entrenched and ingrained and haunt my memory forever. And, you know, hopefully they can go in and look. I just want health. That's it. I just want guys to. It's a scary two game set. Like, it's like, oh man, it's like making a connection flight. You know, on the way to New York, they got to stop for a long connection in Arizona, just to get home. Like, I feel like this is just in the way of getting home, mm-hmm. and I just don't want anybody to get hurt. Please, God.
And it's only two games.
That's the other thing that's worrying me. It's like, it's only two games, they'll be fine. Like, no, these two games I feel like are gonna be a pain in my ass.
Yeah. And the Diamondbacks they don't suck, so that's the difference, right?
No,
the
Angels, they're a pretty good team right now.
The Angels and the Giants both stink. The Diamondbacks, I don't know who expected what out of them. They traded away Goldschmidt and they've still gotten production. Their outfield, David Peralta, Gerard Dyson, and Adam Jones. Yeah. Adam Jones is having a good year.
I mean, I really doesn't surprise me, because I think Adam Jones just needed kind of a change of scenery. Still a good baseball player. I mean, he was still a good baseball player last year, but he was in such a shithole situation. Like, how could you possibly get your best out of a guy in that situation, especially a veteran guy? And Peralta rakes. Like, he was a part of my offseason plan. I wanted to get Peralta at some point because he rakes. So that doesn't surprise me. And then you got a bunch of guys on this team that can flash. I mean, Greinke's still in there. Robbie Ray, who's got really good stuff. So we'll see. We'll see how the Yankees fare in these two games.
Speaking of, you said you were surprised Maben's been around since 2007. You know when Greinke debuted?
Probably 2005.
2004.
Oh, wow.
It just feels like he's been around forever.
Yeah.
I mean, he's been around since 2004. I mean, it's a long time, but... yeah, he's 35. He's not the same Greinke as he was in LA. So he's pitching game two. So it's going to go Sabathia and then Tanaka for the Yankees, Merrill Kelly, and then Greinke for the Diamondbacks. Quick two games. They're going to play him two games later at the stadium. Sort of like a home and home type thing. Yeah, like you said, just get out of there with a split and get out of there with everyone still walking after the game.
Greinke doesn't surprise me, though, like as he's getting... He's probably, if I were to put a list of guys who I think could reinvent themselves getting, you know, older and getting deeper into their career, he'd be one of those guys that could
sort of reinvent himself. Like, yeah, kind of like what Sabathia has done with the less velocity, more movement kind of thing.
That and like, I don't know, Greinke always reminded me of Mussina in that sense, where he's got a lot
he's more of a head case than Mussina.
Yeah, no, I'm talking about just pitching wise. Like, he's got good action on his breaking stuff, but you know, it doesn't always have the big fastball, but figures it out by hitting corners.
I was not thrilled with rumors that the Yankees would sort of take Greinke off.
Well, no, because the contract's stupid too, and it's like.
But even if you say the Diamondbacks paid a quarter of the contract, I still was not excited about that.
Well, I think a lot of people had doubt with Greinke and coming into a big situation or a big big.
He's going to be a more expensive and older Sonny Gray.
Possibly.
Yeah. All right, guys, we're going to go to mailbags in a second. Just a couple housekeeping items. I want to remind you guys, if you have not done so, go check out George's Box Podcast every Wednesday. They are going to be releasing a new podcast. So they have their own feed up on iTunes and Stitcher and Google Play. You can subscribe there. JJ and Keith sort of running around all the MLB and Yankees topics. Last episode got a little contentious, a couple arguments. I kind of liked it. Go check that out. It's coming up pretty fast. May 31st is going to be here before you know it. That's the Red Sox-Yankees BP crew event Friday night at the stadium. I still think the Red Sox, even though they lost again to Tampa on Sunday, Chris Sale still without a win, throwing 92 miles an hour tops. I still think the Red Sox are going to figure their shit out. And I think it'll happen by May 31st. So I expect this to be a big series.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of hope they don't, so that we can just trounce them, because that'll be fun too. I mean, I don't think anybody really cares if they figured it out. People are still going to come because it's Yankees Red Sox, and to see a lashing, like, that would be good. Maybe, I just want healthy Yankees to play in that game.
So maybe it's like the Red Sox are starting to figure it out, and then their fans get their hopes up for that series, and the Yankees just step on their throats.
Yeah, no, I like that. That's a better situation. I like that. But no, that game is. I'm pretty close. I'm pretty sure we're right up around 200 tickets sold. That thing is going to sell out. So get your guys and girls in your crew and join that one up. I know there's a couple big groups coming in too, that like 30 to 40 people that have DM'd me. So we got some big ones. So this thing is going to sell out pretty fast.
It's going to be rowdy too.
It's going to be rowdy. It's going to be a lot of fun. Friday night game. Those are always fun. BP Crew chapters are doing well. Again, if you guys are outside New York, the look on Facebook, go to Facebook and search BP Crew, and you'll find the group that we're pretty much organizing all of these chapters, and they're going off and they have their own Facebook groups as well. So there's a lot of things happening there. Go and join the BP Crew chapters.
All right, mailbags. So this first one from Seth W. Thatcher at Seth_Thatcher81 is, you brought this up a few earlier in the podcast. How much credit do the following people deserve for the Yankees' recent ability to stay above 500? Boone and Cashman. So if you're to split up the pie of the credit pie, what percentages are you giving?
Ugh.
You'd rather do blame pies than credit pies.
No, I don't like assigning numbers to it. So, I'll say 50-50 just to cop my way out of it.
Here's
what I think. Cashman has supplied the guys to come in and do this. He's supplied the depth. He and his team have worked and given, like, I think there's a lot of credit due to what they've done on the scouting side and to load up these minor leagues, even with guys that were not like flashy guys that we're expecting, like the Thyro Estrados, who literally came back from a bullet wound last year. And this guy has a ton of talent, has come up, played well, played second base, played left field when he doesn't even know how to play left field, borrowing people's gloves probably. And he just figures it out. So they have talent. They have guys who can play baseball. And that's first. You can't do anything unless you have that. And then you have Boone, who's rallying, just kind of being the glue to these guys and making sure that, you know, there's a baton being passed from one all-star to a triple-A guy, another all-star to a triple-A guy, another all-star to a double-A guy. And there's just a seamless transition to this team being the same core in the sense that they're just moving along. The lineup is going through, next man up, doesn't matter what your name is, moving the line and just keep getting W. So I think they both deserve a ton of credit.
Estrada gets shot, comes back before Ellsbury because Ellsbury's got some toe issues and some hip issues and some back issues.
That was a tweet that made it around Twitterverse. But yeah, it's true.
I think unless there's a story that we find out later in the season that Boone has been sort of like a whisperer to all these guys and he's like the mastermind behind these young players actually stepping up in a position they didn't think, no one thought they could. I think a bigger piece of the pie needs to go to Cashman because he's the one who built the depth on this 40-man roster. He's the one who has found, like we said, Luke Voit. He found Mike Tauchman. He found these guys who are performing. So I'm not going to say it's all his credit, but I think you got to go at least 70-30 to Cashman.
I mean, but the thing is like when you're talking about Cashman, you're not talking about Mike Ford. When you're talking about Cashman, yeah, you are talking about like Urshela, guys like that.
I mean, but we just credited the pitching staff for carrying this team the last 2 weeks, and who built the pitching staff?
Yeah, no, it's true. Look, he deserves a ton of it, but I think that even if you have some of the talent on in the lower levels, like it's got to be able to come out. Like that talent has to be able to come out on the major league level in a tough situation.
30%.
And I think that's where Boone gets a ton of credit.
Yeah, 30%.
I mean, you have to actually play the games.
All right, Chris Mack. Are you guys at all concerned that with most of our guys expected back around or after the All-Star break that we won't make any trade deadline moves? Or will Cashman operate the trade deadline as he usually does and try to fill some holes and weak points? He says, great show. See you at the parade. So I guess he's a George's Box listener as well. Quick injury updates before we answer his question. Tulowitzki rehabbing in Tampa. He could actually be back ASAP. And Duhar played extended spring training games. He has been making throws from third base. He could be back as soon as the next homestand. Hicks has faced live pitching, finally. We still don't know when he's going to be back. Frazier, he hit and he ran on a treadmill on Sunday. Next steps for him will be to run on a field. They're going to do that in Arizona. So I kind of am guessing here with ETAs on these guys. It sounds like Andujar, Tulowitzki, Stanton, Frazier, and maybe Hicks could all be back in the month of May. June, we could see Betances, and if all things go well, Judge, but most likely not. So maybe just Betances in June. July, Judge, Didi, and Severino, and then sometime in the second half, Jordan Montgomery.
I mean, I'm putting Judge way towards the end of this, honestly. I think Judge, I don't think we see Judge back till after the All-Star break. I think that.
All right, so July.
July, August. I mean, I think they're going to be very, 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 very careful with him. But Andrew Haar looks like he's back like any minute. Tulo, again, same thing. I think Stanton's damn close. And then Frazier, you know, I think we're seeing that it was probably just inflammation and like it flared up, but it's really not a serious thing.
So with Tulo and Hicks, Tulo and Andrew Haar coming back soon, the only thing that concerns me is maybe defensively, because one thing we've seen, this was a great tweet by Sweeney Murdy. The Yankees so far this year rank 13th in double plays turned, middle of the pack. Last year, they were last in baseball, 30th. The guys are catching the ball. Double plays was a huge issue for this team last year. They were giving away outs because
wasn't turning double plays.
They couldn't
all.
Turn like double plays. Anything that was hit to third base was not a double play. And this year, we're seeing it. Yeah. And that I think that's underrated how important that is to a team, especially a team that's not going to put up 10 runs a night.
We're
going to talk about it in a second.
You want Tyler Wade in there instead of Andrew Haar?
No, I will gladly take Andrew Haar. I have no use for Troy Tulowitzki.
Yeah, Troy Tulowitzki is becoming, he seems like it's at this point, like why? You know, when you have guys like Estrada who can come out there and play, and he's a young guy, you know, doing well. Tulowitzki showed, even when he was healthy, he can't hit.
And if Gio Urshela is hopefully going to be back soon, like I've loved what I've seen out of Gio Urshela.
Oh, there's you can't take Urshela off the lineup on the roster and bring up Tulowitzki, and like that's your swap. That's a tough one to watch. That's a tough one to swallow. It doesn't make baseball sense either at this point.
So getting back to Chris's question about how is Cashman going to operate at the trade deadline, and what I think it is a fair question, because I think he's going to have a tough time saying, what do I need for this team this year? But also, who's going to be back and when are they going to be back? There's so much unknown. It's not one guy he's waiting on. It's not two guys. He's waiting on his whole team.
Yeah, I don't know how he's going to operate, because he's not, first of all, he's also not dealing with the same type of minor league system that he has in the past. But a lot of the guys that, you know, you're looking at that are, that can play now too, he kind of like, at what point do you say, okay, I can't trade away some of these guys because we need the depth. We don't know when some of these other guys are going to go down.
That's such an unknown. What if a guy comes back and then realizes what if you bring Andujar back and he realizes, no, my shoulder's not good to go.
There's a few of these injuries that could linger and like resurface. I feel like
Hicks is back. Hicks could go at any minute.
1,000%. Andujar with the labrum, like that could get worse at any point. So you're looking at, you know, and then you look at the pitching side of it, like it, when and if Severino comes back and Betances, like these are issues that could come back. Mm-hmm. So I don't feel great about not having depth there. So that's why it would be tough for Cashman to make a splash at all. And not that I think he needs to anyway, on the deadline. So I think it's more of a filling holes and like, it's a fluid situation. Got to see where we are closer to the deadline, see who's healthy, see what the timelines are, at least the projected timelines at that moment, and see what we can expect. But he's going to have to use the magic eight ball a little bit and say, like, you know, this guy's supposed to come back on here. So we can either rely on that or depend on that, or we have to make a move because of that. So it'll be interesting, but I think it's a fluid situation.
Yeah. And this, we kind of started talking about this. Carl Rayfield, he posted this in the Facebook group. With our current lineup producing.
Carl's kind of my arch nemesis at this point.
Why?
Because he's the one I made the Sonny Gray deal with.
He sent you a nice pack of beer.
Yeah, he did. He did. We've been sending beer back and forth now. We've made it a thing.
Well, he was maybe drinking when he wrote this. With our current lineup producing and people slowly coming off the IL, my concern is what if we start plugging those players back in the lineup and we start losing? Why fix something that isn't broken? So this is the new narrative among some Yankee fans that, hey, I like this scrappy replacement lineup. I don't want that all-star lineup that wasn't getting the job done in the first couple weeks of the season.
Yeah, but I think the tone of his question more is like, what happens if that is the case? You know, because that is a real thing because we have the guys who are playing well now, and then we pop in our starters, and then you know maybe they're slow starters, maybe they don't come back as fast, and some of these other guys are, you know, we're hitting well and we're taking them out of the lineup. So then there's going to be an outroar of like, whoa, but so-and-so was hitting and why did we change things up? And like, it's going to be a thing. But you can't look at that. Like, these guys have a job to do right now, and their job is to keep the ship afloat for the starters to come back. That's their job. Their job is to not to continue to play when the guys come back. Everybody knows that. The whole team knows that. They know they're better when these guys are back off the shelf. So, you know, we just have to, like, some of these guys probably are not going to come back and start off well. You know, like, there are going to be slow starts, and there are going to be those times.
There's the instant gratification that people are going to be saying, well, where's the production? Andujar's back. He went 0-for-4 and made an error in the field. Yeah. What are we doing? So I get it. You're gonna have to power through it for a couple weeks, I think.
I think so too. That's gonna be one of those things where they're just gonna have to deal with it and let's go. But you know what? At the end of the day, they will be good.
At the end of the day, I don't think anyone is really saying that this is better than.
No, I think it's just
We're all happy they're winning. Like we said, though, it's a house of cards. It could come crumbling down at any minute. And they need to start plugging their regulars back in there. That is the only way it doesn't come crumbling down, is that you start bringing back guys who are able to prop up the house of cards.
Right. And stop losing replacement players as well to injury.
So the next
The injury bug has to stop, bottom line.
Oh, I mean... on the one hand, I say this team cannot take any more hits, but then they take more hits and they still keep going. So when is the limit? Where's the end?
It's coming.
It's right there. So this is a question we got from a few people with the outfield current situation, but David Williams at David A. I. Williams on Twitter. What's the status of Estevan Florial? So I think some people are saying, hey, we need an outfielder. Florial, number one prospect. What's going on there? He had the wrist issue again. Early in the season, early in spring training, he had the cast come off on April 19th. He's expected to start baseball activities any day. But he's never played above single A. If he was healthy all through spring training, I still don't think they would have called him up.
No, they wouldn't have called him up, but he would have been probably on a faster track. So he was in single A last year. I mean, it would not have surprised me one bit if he had started off, if he was healthy, started off in double A or you know, maybe even
he missed so much of last year though. Like,
yeah, but I'm saying, like, if he was healthy, I don't think he would have been in Tampa for very long. Like, they were going to let him progress. And especially with all of these injuries, we very well could have seen him at some point, you know, Cameron Maybin or Estevan Florial from double A. I mean,
okay,
honestly,
but if you're just looking for a couple week fill-in, I don't think the Yankees are going to risk Florial's development and service
time. I don't think you're
right,
but that's the thing. You're not service time is the issue. You're not risking development, I don't think, because he would be playing.
He would be playing against competition he might not be ready for.
Yeah, but I'm not so much concerned about that. More the stunting of your growth is when you come up and you're not playing. Like there's no reason for a guy to come up from AAA. Who's a young guy that's going to be a position player and play every day, for him to come up and be a bench guy, because it's just, they're very different things. I don't want that. I'd rather him play every day, get you know, the everyday reps in AAA. So that's like the situation. And it's almost like like what happened with Loaiza. Like, he came up from AA because they needed him. Like, he was on the 40 and they needed him. And that's the other thing. Like, you got to play games without 40 at some point.
Yeah, I think the service time and 40 man is probably a bigger thing than development, yeah, maybe.
I agree. And I think that if he were healthy, and all this is moot because he's not, and he wasn't, but we very well could have seen him, or at least we would have heard rumblings, I think, of him getting closer.
Yeah. Last question, Mark Sherman at Shark Merman on Twitter. If you could have a magic wand, if you could wave a magic wand and one member of the core four could be inserted into this team in his prime, who would it be and why? Core four, Jeter, Mariano, Pettit, Posada. Cannot say Bernie. He is excluded from the exclusive core four member club.
That's a damn shame, because Bernie Williams is a guy that I would love to have on this team right now. Bernie Williams
really
is
use
a guy
an outfielder right about now.
We could really use a center fielder who can hit,
switch
and
hit,
just lock it down. Yeah, I'm bucking the trend of this bullshit core four name, because that's the guy, a magic wand of a guy who we're bringing in. It's the Fab Five, whatever the hell you want to call them, because of that era. Bernie Williams is absolutely part of this group, and Bernie Williams is definitely the guy.
So you're cheating.
No, I'm not cheating. I'm what I'm doing is I'm making this right, because that's the way the question needed to be worded, and that's the way history needs to be worded. It Bernie Williams is part of this core.
Okay, well, so
when we don't see him in there.
Here's the thing. So you're drafting for need. I'm drafting talent, and I will take an in his prime Derek Jeter on this team right now. They okay, need fine. Some infielders as well as outfielders.
Yeah. Okay, great. They're both very good players. Very good players.
Can confirm. Good at baseball.
I really not a bad answer on all of these. Maybe Posada is the one guy that we probably wouldn't, you know, not a spot for Posada, I guess, on this team.
I guess the position they need least, at least on paper, is relief pitching.
Yeah. But or catcher.
Mariano. All right, that's going to do it for us. Again, this is just keeps rolling. It's fun to watch. A couple of quick games in Arizona before coming back home. And against a team that you get to just punch up on, right? The Twins, that's just an easy punching bag. They always are. They're always somebody that we can just...
A lot of former Yankees over there, you know? Are we going to see Pineda? I haven't even looked at the matchups yet.
I have not looked yet either. We will talk about that next week. Any last words, Scott?
Again, next man up. Buy the t-shirt. Keep it rolling. Let's all get behind these guys. Mike Ford for the win.
All right, we'll talk to you Thursday.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.